form the Midwest chapter of this opportunity for their next event.
Okay. Bring us down to item 13, the Missouri River Refuge Review.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. Kevin Roblin here again, Special Projects Coordinator with Game Fish and Parks. Joining me today and reviewing or giving a presentation on the Missouri River Refuges is Mark Ohm, Regional Supervisor out of Region 2, stationed down in Chamberlain. So we're going to jump into this presentation here, and if there's questions along the way, just feel free to interject and we'll hopefully answer whatever we can. Missouri River Refuge Review. You know, guidance from our strategic plan, under Strategy 1, that's how important this is to simplify and increase recreational opportunities by 2020. That's been a focus. It's been an effort that has been front and center with the department over at least, you know, the last couple years since this plan has been put in place. You know, examples include removing regulatory burdens. They include increasing the number of acres open to public hunting and fishing, and applying consistency to current rules and regulations. That simplification factor, making it easier for folks to hunt and fish in this state, is a big part of what we're trying to do. And why are we doing this? It comes down to the sustainability of our hunting and fishing heritage. It does rely on participation. It does. I mean, without hunters and anglers in the fields and on those lakes and rivers, we wouldn't have wildlife management. We wouldn't have fisheries management as we know it today. So we must focus on recruiting the next generation. That's what this is about. That's what this effort's focused at, recruiting the next generation. So getting back to the refuges and the process, you know, over the last few months and how this all came about, it really started back in March of 2018. Well, it even started in 2016 with the strategic plan, but 2018 is when the rubber started to hit the road. A petition was received by the commission to remove essentially a refuge down there near Lower Brule on the Missouri River. The commission tabled essentially or rejected the petition. As a result of that, the commission asked the department to form an internal work group and review all waterfowl refuges on the Missouri River system. And that's where things begin. I mean, that was the action that initiated further action, essentially. And we made that commitment to do a thorough review of all 21 refuges up and down the Missouri River. So a 12-member internal work group was formed, it wasn't just waterfowl biologists. It was conservation officers. Myself and Mark were on that group, leading that group. It was a whole plethora of different disciplines. We've had parks folks on there. We had our non-game biologist on there. Our human dimension specialist was on there. We had a fishery staff individual was on there. It was a list of multiple disciplines across the department to get a good cross-section of, you know, what we should be looking at on those Missouri River refuges when coming up and formulating criteria ideas. Numerous meetings were held from August to current, and really to discuss the available data we do have. Not only that, but also to formulate draft criteria. And that's really the reason for this presentation, is to present to the commission the draft criteria the work group came up with, essentially. And it is draft, very draft. And we'd like to run that by you and obtain other ideas as well. From there, then, an internal email was sent to all department staff the end of November that did include draft recommendations for those 21 refuges based on the draft criteria. And this was meant to be a discussion starter, to start the discussion. And that's, in a sense, where things got a little in the cart in front of the horse. People decided things, decisions were already made based off that email, but it was draft recommendations based off draft criteria. So I want to make that very clear today. And then a public meeting was held in Pierre on December 4th to review that draft criteria, and that was Tuesday night. and drifters just a couple days ago, as you heard referenced here earlier in the open forum. So really what this presentation is going to cover is review the survey data and hunter trends. Hunter trends are, you'll see in a bit, they're disturbing with waterfowl hunters. They're going down a precipitous decline. It is actually the greatest user group that's seen the most declines, if you will, at a great rate, and we'll get into that in just a second. Provide data on shifts in migratory patterns, hunter participation, and waterfowl populations. We're going to look at some of the history and status of refuges on the Missouri River here today. How are or were refuges created? When were they created? Those types of things. What are the differences in refuges? We have some take line, water line, refuges out there currently today. And then, obviously, today we'd like to review that draft criteria with all of you in great detail. So getting into some of the biology, I get to put my biologist hat on again, and Rocco Morano put a lot of these slides together, and if Rock was listening in, I want to thank him personally for doing so. So in South Dakota, we essentially have three subspecies, migratory behaviors that occur in South Dakota with our Canada geese. We have the Western Prairie Great Plains Large. We have the temperate breeding Canada geese, which those would be more considered our local geese that breed and migrate within the continent, essentially, or within North America, or within just the United States, I should try to say. And then we have those geese, also referred to as the central flyway Arctic nesting Canada geese. And what is really interesting here, here's your western, it's a pretty narrow flyway. So we have birds up in the northern, Saskatchewan, up in there, and they're pretty north to south. This is the area they utilize. But if you look closely at, we have birds all the way up in the tundra that could come right through Pier, come through the Prairie Pothole region, and this encompasses a very large migratory pattern. So it's pretty neat to see some of these birds are traveling a very, very, very long ways to come right to Pier or on the Missouri River. So it's good to get an overview of the behavior of some of these geese and where they're coming from, and how far they are coming from and how many areas they do pass over to get here. How is our large Canada goose breeding population? This was looking specifically at the Western Prairie Great Plains population. And you can see, actually, they've been on the rise since the 1970s. These are breeding pairs. This is a breeding index of Canada geese. And they've been increasing 4% on an annual basis since about 2008. And there's similar trends for the temperate breeding Canada geese across the continent as well. Canada geese are doing good. It's one of the best or biggest success stories in the history of wildlife management. In the 1970s, you needed a big game tag to harvest Canada geese, one goose. And now we offer Canada goose hunting opportunities across almost the entire state. There's bag limits and upwards of 8 and 15 during some parts of the season. So Canada goose populations are doing well, very well. It's a great success story. Mallard breeding populations, a little more cyclical. You see there, they're up and down, up and down, up and down. We're coming off a peak here, actually, in 2015. But for the most part, bird numbers are good in the mallard world as well. Here's the graph I was referring to that might really catch your attention. Catches mine, for sure. And in 2000, we had about 22,000 Canada goose hunters. 2001, we had a little over 25,000 Canada goose hunters. And since 2001, we've been on a precipitous decline. 2017, we're down to about 9,700. That's a scary number to look at. I mean, hunter recruitment, retention, reactivation of waterfowl hunters, this is a nationwide issue. Nationwide, waterfowl hunters are declining at the fastest rate. Something we keep a very close eye on. 60% decline since 2001, duck hunters show a similar trend. This isn't just goose hunters, this is waterfowl hunters. Missouri River goose harvest. And it's hard to see that line, I apologize, but in there, the yellow. There's our South Dakota harvest outside the Missouri River. And this blue here is the Missouri River harvest. And you can see not too long ago, we were harvesting 60,000 geese in close proximity to the Missouri River. They're not all right on the river, but I believe the harvest statistic goes out 25 miles. When we survey our hunters, we ask, you know, were these geese harvested near or within the Missouri River corridor, we say. But you can see that's dropped down to about 20,000 in 2017. So if you were to put a trend line down here, and I like trend lines, you'll see them here in a bit, we're declining. We have declined over the last few years, and there is some reasons for that, and it's hard to figure out why geese do what they do, but we try. So I'll explain that here in a bit. Percentage of the Missouri River harvest overall, looking statewide, this is percent that are harvested in proximity to the Missouri River compared to the rest of the state. You know, almost half of our geese back in in the late 90s, 97, 98, were coming from the Missouri River proximity. Goose hunting, as we know it, I mean, it still is a very popular activity in and around Pierre and up and down the Missouri River, but that's actually declined as well. It's increased a little bit over the last couple of years, but you can see the decline. But this also, we have to remember, harvest outside the Missouri River corridor has increased, which will drive this proportion down as well. So that's something to consider when looking at this graph. This is a really busy graph, but it's meant to be busy because it really displays the variation in the data set. And what I mean by that is every year is a little different. This is bird numbers in North Dakota pertaining to Canada geese and mallards. So this top graph is North Dakota, and this is important because obviously North Dakota is north of us. And if those birds stay in North Dakota, they're not keen to South Dakota on the Missouri River. But what we're seeing here in North Dakota is an increasing trend of staging waterfall in North Dakota since about 1980. You can see here it's really spiked in the last couple years. And that little black line there and all that clutter is actually the trend line of a pretty good increase in goose numbers staying in North Dakota. This is the midwinter waterfall count. Mallards are a little different story. I mean, they're increasing a little bit, but not as much of an increase as we see in Canada goose. So on the flip side of that, here's the South Dakota graph. You know, in 1980s, we were seeing upwards of 300,000 wintering geese, 500,000 wintering geese, 500,000 geese in the Missouri River complex and that were being counted. And that's been on a steady decline. So you see this inverse relationship, increase for North Dakota, decrease for South Dakota. What does that tell us? Likely more birds are staying and staging in North Dakota than they have in the past. There could be a lot of reasons for that. Change in landscape practices, you know, more corn is available in North Dakota for feeding, opportunities for those Canada geese in that country. There's a lot of potential reasons. It's really hard to nail this one down. But you can see this is the data that we've collected over the last, essentially, 30 years, so 35 years. I'm going to turn it over to Mark now, and he's going to get more in the criteria end of things and get into some more of the discussion regarding the criteria.
Good afternoon, Chairman and Commission members. Again, my name is Mark Ulm. I'm the regional supervisor out of Chamberlain, as Kevin said. Just to set the stage a little bit, we're going to get into a little bit of the history and what gives us the ability to be here. So South Dakota Codified Law 41-2-18 gives the commission authority to adopt the rules to create, modify, or vacate state refuges. That probably should seem fairly familiar because it's the same statute that we discussed when talking about the eastern refuges. One of the differences, there's only one rule that lists all of the Missouri River refuges. Where on the eastern side of the state, each refuge is listed in its own rule. All of the 21 refuges currently on the Missouri River system are listed under the same administrative rule. So it's a little bit different system on that side of things. Some differences in those refuges, currently 14 of those refuges are open to duck hunting after the goose season closes. Now, right now, that doesn't make a big difference because the goose season is longer than the duck season. So there are no openings there. Obviously, that leaves seven of them that are closed to all waterfowl hunting during all waterfowl seasons. Just for your information, if you include all of the Missouri River within South Dakota, currently 11% of the Missouri River in South Dakota, of the water surface in Missouri River, is in refuge status at this time. Yes. 21. Yes. So kind of a real basic history of this, we've got about a 75-page document, I believe, that touches on a lot of this. But as was stated earlier, at one point in time, the entire river system was in refuge. This has gone through a variety of changes, everything from all of it off at one point to pieces of it being in refuge listed in state statute, to some of them being modified. Some have been only take line refuges where you could hunt the water but you could not hunt the ground. We have refuges now that are water line refuges where you can hunt the adjoining land as long as you're not in the water. And then we have what we're calling take line refuges now that include both the water and the adjoining public land all the way up to the original Corps of Engineers take line. This refuge, or this review, is only dealing with these refuges on the Missouri River. We're not looking at anything off of the river at this time. So just a bit of the layout here, we have on Lake Oahe shown here, we have 12 refuges. Lake Oahe includes 160 river miles within South Dakota. Something else to consider is that along those, we border two reservations, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. Currently, none of our refuges on Lake Oahe are within the tribal reservation boundaries because we have them split at the center line of the river. So everything on Lake Oahe only on the eastern side of the river. We don't have anything on the western side of the river right now. Lake Sharp, we have three refuges. There's 85 river miles, and again, we have two reservations that border Lake Sharp. All three of the refuges on Lake Sharp are at least partially, if not completely, within reservation boundaries. Earlier in the year, you heard a petition from Laura Brule to modify two of these refuges, and that's part of what brought us here. So, on Lake Francis Case, we have six refuges on 107 river miles. These refuges are border or are included within three different reservation boundaries, Lower Brule, Crow Creek, and Yankton Sioux Tribes. The furthest downstream refuge that we have is right at Pickstown. It is the Fort Randall Tailwater Refuge. We do not have any refuges further downstream towards Yankton or anything. When we formed this group, we had to ask ourselves, what are these criteria going to be used for? What is the purpose of this exercise? And we said these criteria could be used by the commission when any proposed modifications to the refuge system are brought. So this will be a list of facts that we can provide you that we hope will help you in making your decision on the proposed changes. These proposed changes, just like any proposals that you see, can be originated from Game Fish and Park staff or from the public through the petition process. Proposals to modify a waterfowl refuge fall under three basic options. To modify, which is a wide variety of things, changing the size, changing from a take line to a water line or a water line to a take line, altering the effective dates of the refuge. We heard potential proposals of changing it from a waterfowl refuge to a complete game refuge. The list is almost endless on what could be modified proposals on that. The next proposal is just to remove a refuge. Maybe the refuge isn't performing the way we thought it would. Maybe the waterfowl aren't using it anymore, or whatever reason that you would see fit to remove a refuge. Or you can add a refuge. We want to make that clear that these criteria are not only going to be used to modify or change current refuges, but to also assess the possibility of adding a refuge. So, and obviously, the commission always has the option of not accepting any change proposed and leaving it as a status quo. So, where are we at this point? What criteria have we identified? If you look at page 13 of your booklets, we have those listed out. These are the draft criteria that this internal work group identified, and on the presentation we also have included several potential criteria that were brought up during the public meeting on Tuesday night. So we'll touch base on those as well. So the first one is current waterfowl use, and we have that split out as low, medium, or high when we're comparing the current refuge systems. But these numbers are gained basically, the best way we have to get these numbers currently is by our weekly waterfowl counts. We fly those on a weekly basis, basically from November through ICE up. The difference with these, though, the thing I would caution you on is that these are not meant to be a true scientific survey. These are a way that we can inform hunters of where there are congregations of waterfowl. We use it to create the thunderstorm map that you hear about at times, and really give hunters a better opportunity to locate these waterfowl and target their hunting efforts, if you will. If this is a criteria that we will use, I would recommend that we also take input from the local landowners, local hunters, on whether or not birds are using that refuge and what numbers they are seeing as well, because there are chances that when we fly, the birds may not be in the refuge, they may be out feeding or something similar to that. So we want to make sure we capture all the birds using that refuge, and just want to make it clear that that flight may not do that 100% of the time. So the next criteria is, does the refuge provide local hunting opportunities? Basic question, yes or no, and what type? It's a basic question, but it's hard to compile that information. We have some knowledge within staff, but this is another one where we would need to go to the public and say, hey, do you see people hunting birds that come out of this refuge? You know, what opportunities are out there? Is there field hunting available? Is it pass shooting? Is it public ground hunting? For our original definition, we stayed away from differentiating between public ground hunting versus private ground hunting or commercial hunting or anything like that, because in the end, hunting opportunity is hunting opportunity. And that's what we wanted to look at. There was, during the public meeting, there was some recommendations that we need to identify those differences. If it's public ground opportunity versus commercial opportunity or private ground opportunity, there were some folks there that felt that it was important to know those differences. So. The next criteria is, how many miles of shoreline are included that provide protection from the prevailing winds? What we see with this is, whether a piece of the river is in refuge or not, you really see waterfowl of all types key into those areas that are protected from the prevailing winds and from storms and things like that. Really makes a lot of sense, and refuges that don't provide any of that protection may not be getting used by as many waterfowl as are using areas that aren't in refuge but do provide that protection. So the next criteria, how much access is available in the area, whether it's boating access or shoreline access. Can you drive up to the boundary of the take line? Can you to get in there to pass shoot birds coming off, or just something that we identified that might make a difference in that. Is there any non-game benefits? We were really trying to key in on whether or not there was any endangered species impacts or other things like that. Essentially, the biggest impact we were seeing is that many of these refuges are within the whooping crane migratory patterns as well. There's also several refuges that include areas that have a lot of wintering bald eagle activity and things like that. So changing those refuges may impact those species as well. Are there any agreements with outside entities involved with these refuges? Have we made an agreement with a tribal entity? Have we made an agreement with one of the cities that border these? Have we made agreements with neighboring landowners that would impact these refuges? Things like that. Are there any safety concerns to consider? We have refuges that encompass the major dams on the river. Obviously, if hunters are hunting in and around the infrastructure of those dams, that could create an issue, or along the shorelines of a city like Pier, Fort Pier, where there are homes and businesses and everything. We want to recognize that those safety issues can also play a role. And finally, obviously not the least piece of the smallest piece of the puzzle, but what input have we received from the public? This is what we tried to gain on Tuesday night, and we had a group of very passionate hunters and sportsmen there, and we heard a lot of opinions. We had 80 to 90 people attended, best estimate. We never did get a solid count. It was hard to keep track of people as they came and went. We tried to go through this basic presentation, kept the meeting focused on draft criteria. There were a lot of options being brought up, a lot of different ideas and proposals that people wanted to discuss. But in the end, this was the main focus of that meeting. A lot of back and forth dialogue. There was some concern expressed regarding decisions to remove refuges had already been made. We'll share the timeline that we shared, a tentative timeline that we thought would move forward. But after that meeting and discussions during that meeting, we really feel that we may have to take a second look at that, back off, and give us more time to discuss these. A lot of people upset about the lack of geese utilizing the Missouri River, and how do we get that back? And you heard today that it might be a good idea to form a work group to look at how do we attract geese back to this area. So that is something that I think we should consider as well. Many people express frustration about how refuges need to be closed off to all forms of recreational use, whether that's boating and fishing or any sort of activity within it where you're hunting or creating a disturbance that would disturb those birds. There was also a need identified for more public meetings, and I would go on record as saying that if and when we have proposals to modify any of these refuges, I will commit to having public meetings in the areas that those refuges are so that we can get local input before any changes are proposed or finalized. So. We did receive some feedback on draft criteria and received additional criteria topics to consider. To the best of our ability, we captured those here. What other authorized outdoor activities occur within the refuge boundary that could potentially harass staging waterfowl? What benefits is the refuge providing to surrounding landowners? Like I mentioned earlier, is the hunting opportunities available in that area a public hunting or private hunting opportunity? And we also heard some interest in reducing harvest limits to decrease the pressure on these birds. Um, So how do we get the information that we need to provide based on these criteria? One of the things that I mentioned is the waterfowl counts. I have to apologize. We do not have the actual tables loaded onto this computer. So if you would like to see those, I know Commissioner Sharp has seen some of these. But if you'd like to see those, we will provide the access to you and get you copies of those so you can and look at those. But it really gives you an idea of what refuges are being used by the birds, what refuges are not being used by the birds at this point. And we have a full table that listed out all of the draft criteria and put that information on a single table so you can compare one refuge to another and see the differences that way. Finally, the biggest tool that I believe we have at this time is this database dashboard. And again, I apologize, the link is not working at this point, but I do have a clip of it here. With this dashboard, our GIS folks are incredibly smart and make me think I need to go back to school. But you can go refuge by refuge, and it will automatically pull up each map. And you can see, if I can figure out how to, yeah. You can see on the map, this is Mail Shack. Mail Shack Refuge right here. You can see each of these dots is a point where our aerial flight count showed birds sitting at one point. I believe this is in 2009. So this is all of the counts that our aerial flight took in 2009. Gives us a really good idea of what parts of the refuges these birds are using. If we had the full refuge or full desktop available to us, we can show you refuges that, interestingly, there are no birds counted within the refuge, but many birds outside of the refuge on the other side of the river where there's more protection from the wind. We also have the number of access points identified on this. Some of this is very subjective on what counts as an access point. Is being able to drive within a half mile and walking access to it, or is it, do you need to be able to drive right to the boundary? That sort of thing. So any questions on that? I wish I had the full one here that we could demonstrate some of the other aspects of it, but we can sure do that at a later time as well. So onto our tentative timeline, and again, this is very tentative. This is kind of what we had identified going into this, but as we mentioned, I think it would be a good idea to step back and take another look at this and probably push this timeline back a little bit. The actual dates we'll leave up to you, but December 6th, we're presenting the draft criteria. You know, the idea was to gain further public input on the criteria up until the next commission meeting on January 10th. During that time, it was planned to start putting those proposals together for any recommended changes. I would recommend pushing that back now and forming these work groups with individuals and the public to look at those further. But finalization would be in March on this timeline. But again, that was a very aggressive timeline. We understood that going into it, and I don't think it would hurt at all to push this back. So is there any questions? That was a lot in a very short amount of time. but that's the end of what we have, so we'd be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Commissioner Gary Jensen, say, when these were designated refuges in the first place, when was that?
Commissioner Jensen, each refuge was formed at a different time, and with them being all listed under the same administrative rule, we have the date each time that rule was amended, but it's very difficult to tell which refuge was changed at which date. We have done our best to look at that, and I apologize, I did not bring that sheet with me. But many of the commission notes that we had available to us simply stated that Missouri River refuges were modified at this time. It didn't state what the actual modification was. So I apologize, we don't have great dates on that.
No, that's not your fault, but part of my reason for asking is, were there criteria used when these were originally designated or not?
That's a very good question, and one that is difficult to answer, because there was in the actual my understanding is some of them were simply a request from the public. There wasn't much input. Some of the originals, when they were established, literally people sat down and said, we know birds sit here, 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 and here, let's create a refuge there. Not a lot of set criteria really went into it, and I would say that each refuge was created potentially for different reasons. So
then, you know, seems like we hear from time to time that there's too many geese here and too many geese there, but we don't have enough geese here. Is that the problem?
That is the certainly the message that we heard Tuesday night, and the message that we hear from many of the waterfowl hunters, goose hunters in particular, along the Missouri River, yes.
And so somebody has suggested that a big factor, and Kevin alluded to it, is, I mean, several years ago, there wasn't much corn being planted in North Dakota, and South Dakota had a lot of corn, and so that lent itself to the geese coming here to feed, and that's changed dramatically. And so now up in North Dakota, we have corn far more than we used to, and so that's one of the reasons they stay up there. And then perhaps when they're ready to go, they don't have to stop here and they just fly by to Nebraska. Now, I don't know if that's true, but is there any
Commissioner Jensen, Kevin Roblin here again, Special Projects Coordinator. You know, there's a lot of different potential variables that impact migration strategy and migration behavior. You know, landscape changes regarding food resources, i.e. the corn discussion we were talking about here, could be one of them. Other is precipitation. You know, how's that changed in the last 30, 40, 50 years? Are the winters a little warmer? Is seasonably warmer winters sometimes can hold birds in certain areas for a longer period of time. Birds need two things. They need open water and they need a food resource. And if they have those two things, they're going to stick around. So it's just so hard to nail down one variable that, you know, that will keep birds in a certain area. But those would be the two main things, you know. And we see that those two things have changed over the years, potentially.
So what I'm trying to figure out is, so if we have these refuges, safe places for these birds to go, to be, but they're not there for whatever reasons, maybe it's corn or what otherwise, you know, what possible wildlife management can we do, or techniques, or what would we do? You know, we can't tell North Dakota to quit planting corn. but what would be on the list of possible management to address this?
Well, you know, there are some refuges that aren't getting a lot of use, but there are others on the Missouri River that are getting a lot of use. They're getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of staging ducks and geese are utilizing those refuges. So some are definitely getting the use that was intended, those refuges were intended for. Your question's a tough one, Commissioner Jensen, and, you know, there isn't a lot we can do regarding the overall behavior of the migratory behavior of these birds, especially if they're not flying over South Dakota. Nebraska and Kansas, you know, some years they see more birds. Is that because of our hunting strategies here? Is that because of our winters here? It's so hard to compare, you know, kind of separate those two and really point the finger at just one thing. It's always going to be a combination of things, you know, and that's what makes this so difficult. Migratory birds are an amazing thing. I mean, you see how far they're migrating from the Arctic tundra all the way down to Texas in some cases, which is such a long ways, and all the variables that impact those birds all along that route are pretty incredible, really. So to pinpoint it just to one thing, maybe, you know, human disturbance or hunting pressure, or, you know, it's impossible to essentially do at times.
Commissioner Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp here. First of all, thanks for your effort on this. You know, one thing that gets questioned out there is the integrity of the process and the information we have at hand. And there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that you guys look at over every nook and cranny and scientific piece of data out there, and you do a great job of it. And ultimately what happens then is that when you make presentations, you've had a year to look at this, and the presentation's being made to people that have had a minute to hear it. And so there's a real disconnect in what people are understanding. And having said that, I think I'm glad we're taking, I would certainly support taking a step back on this, moving that timeline back a little bit. And I would encourage you to take a look at the work group you're talking about. I think you had a few gentlemen here today that have offered their time as well as their contacts up and down the river that would be an integral part of arriving at some conclusions. And even if the conclusions don't change, I think having these people involved in the discussions and looking at the same data that you guys are looking at will really make a huge difference in how people feel about the outcome. So I think you're really doing a good thing by taking a step back. And like I say, I'd recommend you contact the gentleman that volunteered their services today to get involved in this, because it's a hugely emotional issue. It's been going on a long time. I remember, you know, a hunt I went on, it was probably 10 years ago, with some people from Minnesota that wanted to have talks about how come they weren't getting the same amount of birds flying through Minnesota that we were here, and how much the flyways had changed over time. So, I mean, it's an ongoing discussion, and what we can come up with this year will probably change in a few years. But, again, I think the integrity of the process is important. You guys are doing a great job. Taking a step back and getting some of these other people involved in the work groups will, I think, help the outcome be more understood. So keep up the good work on that.
Any other comments?
Kathy. Commissioner Peterson, the flyway that goes over the eastern part of the state, does that in effect affected at all with what goes over the river? Or?
I wish Rocco was here to answer that question, Commissioner Peterson. I can't for certain say one way or another if it would be. To my knowledge, that is a completely separate flyway, but there could be some birds that interlap or interchange between one or the other. But, you know, the rule of thumb is there are definitive flyways that those birds stay in, but that's not to say they couldn't go in different flyways as they migrate up and down north to south. One thing I would just like to add as well, if I could, you know, there was a Missouri River Refuge Task Force put in place in 1985, and we failed to mention that. So it's been 33 years since there's been a real intense look at all refuges along the Missouri River. And we are committed to kind of regenerizing that task force, if you will. And we'll definitely look at pushing that timeline back if that's the wishes of the commission. We'd certainly recommend that as a work group, pushing that timeline back and giving us some more time to work with the public directly in a more of a focused stakeholder type group, and to hear and make sure those concerns are expressed and give them time and give us some time to really hash through this very complex issue at times.
Okay, well, let's do this. There's a lot of factors that enter into this, as well as climate change and all this that affected this. It's been a long time since it's really been looked at. Probably most of this criteria wasn't even used back then for some of it. So I think it'd be well to establish a work study group that entails people that are interested in this area of the state along the river here, and set up a work group. I mean, you've got a great start in that you have all this information gathered with no conclusions yet, which is what is important, and let that work group help you make the decisions that you would bring before the commission, And I think it, I would hate to have to sift through all this that we are looking at here and try and make a decision. So I think a work group would be very effective in helping us go forward. And we're under no time restraint, are we? I don't think so. If that's all right with the commission, should we proceed that way? Is that a good way to go? And then you can give us, you know, what kind of progress you're making on this as it goes forward, and we'll head that direction. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I could say one thing. I mean, would June or July be more acceptable? Would that be okay, or even August of 2019 to give us some more time? We don't need to define a date, but I'm thinking down the road here, and I like goals and setting goals, and if that would be acceptable to the commission here. I would be thinking July-ish time frame.
I think that would be fine, because you got to get this thing organized, have the meetings, come up with some conclusions, and we should probably get the blessings of the secretary on establishing a work group here. So
absolutely, yes. Well, thank you for the discussion, and we'll be in touch on this topic, and we'll also be in touch with the public for those listening in. And we'll be asking or requesting for further participation from the public. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, guys.